listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
November 14, 1986, during Ronald Reagan's administration, Congress passed the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act. Probably the worst act. Anyway, our next guest is Wayne Rohde. He is the author of The Vaccine Court, The Dark Truth of America's Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. Wayne, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate all that you've done, and I have your book. I bought it. I had you on a couple of years ago, and we had a wonderful conversation. And anyway, your website is vaccinecourt.com, and you have a very personal interest in this because of your own family situation, and I think that many families have been damaged by vaccines, of course, but give us a little bit of history.
Okay. First off, vaccine injury is not as rare as what we've been led to believe. It is more prominent, and we're starting to see many, many different ailments and medical conditions, and it can be traced back to over vaccination or improper vaccination. But going back to my personal family is I have twin sons. They're now 22. They're going to be 23 in October. And they were vaccinated for the first time at 13 months with the MMR vaccine. They were sick probably for about 2 weeks prior to the 12 months, so we did not go in and get vaccinated when they were six. We waited until they were healthy. And at 13 months, we took them in, and both received the MMR vaccine. Austin just cried for 5 minutes, and then he was over. He was done with. But Nicholas reacted severely, and he had some reactions to the MMR vaccine, and it went on for a couple weeks of constant chronic crying, and then the constipation and the diarrhea and the vomiting and arching the back, and we knew something was there, but our pediatrician says, oh, that happens in rare cases and he'll be okay. And after a couple weeks, that kind of subsided a bit. But what we noticed was over the period of about 18 months, a slow decline in his regular, development. And that was he lost his speech over that period of time. He lost his desire or ability to play with his brother appropriately. Very isolated, always staring at things that moved, like the ceiling fans or whatever. And it took us a while. He did receive a diagnosis of severe regressive autism. And at the time, the pediatrician doctor that gave us the diagnosis gave us a Xerox copy of two pages from some book, from his textbook that he had from Columbia University, and a prescription for Ritalin. We couldn't believe it. And it took us a couple more years after that to figure out something happened here. This is not, you don't develop, you don't regress into this. Cause he was a normal child at 12 months. But something happened, and then my wife kept, digging into it. And she finally started thinking this is a vaccine injury. But by the time we figured that out, we contacted Cliff Shoemaker and a couple other attorneys, the prominent attorneys in the program. They said, yes, your son's been injured, but we're sorry, it's past the statute of limitations, meaning 3 years have transpired from when the first symptoms appeared, which is 13 months, to when we could file. So we were actually out by approximately 6 months. It was 3 years, 6 months, and we couldn't file.
Filing with the vaccine court.
With the vaccine court, mm-hmm. with the NVICP, the National Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, as you were describing on the intro. And so we couldn't do anything about that. So we kind of, okay, we'll figure something out here. And this is before a lot of, and we were living in Oklahoma at the time, so we really didn't have access to anything, any doctors, nurses, or anybody that could say, is there any way to help detoxify this child? That just didn't occur in our conversations with medical professionals. But at the same time, we had to deal with Nicholas going forward, and being on the severe end, we needed to do therapies and try to recover as much as we could. The catchphrase that I like to use is try to get him to escape from the iron claws of autism. And that cost a lot of money, and insurance coverage didn't provide any of that. And so we started paying a lot of money monthly for therapists, for care, and it got up to about $3,000 to $3,500 a month we paid out of pocket. That started my, I couldn't figure out why the insurance companies weren't helping, even for certain medical conditions that you could get coverage for a typical child, but because he had a diagnosis of autism, he couldn't receive. So there was a disparity there. There was a discrimination within the autism, within the insurance policy, depending on the diagnosis. That got me going on the advocacy trail, and I started out in Oklahoma on the insurance coverage for all disabilities, because I noticed that it wasn't just autism. It was some of the other childhood disabilities that they were getting discriminated. And while I was doing that, Thimerosal-free vaccine concept started popping up around the country. And we tried to get that through the Oklahoma legislature along with insurance coverage. And so that's got me going. But it wasn't until 2010 when we moved out of Oklahoma to Minnesota that we decided, you know, we needed a big change. And that's when I said, okay, I'm going to start looking back into this vaccine court. And that's when I started doing the research. And when I started finding case decisions, what was actually happening. And I started interviewing a couple families. And then all of a sudden, oh, boy, here we go. And I started interviewing more and more families. And I tried to stay away from the autism side because I knew about that. I was looking into the hepatitis B injuries and death cases from there, looking into a few other types of things. And Gardasil was just starting to come about, and a few others. It was just starting to be a mess. And that's what got me focused. And in 2011, I decided to wrote a book, and it was published in November of 2014, and was out there for a long time. And then my publisher came back to me and said, hey, we want you to do that book. We're going to put it in paperback. Would you care to revise one or two chapters? And I said, you got to be kidding me. I'm going to revise most of that book because I had to update it. And because of a lot of new things in development. So what I did is it's Vaccine Court 2.0. It'll be coming out in October of this year, but it's going to have probably another 200 and some pages worth of new material. And then I went back in and updated and revised a lot of the existing chapters. So I got pretty much a new book, but it's on the same topic.
Great.
And that brought me. So that's where I'm at with that. And then I've got to have, and then I'm going to be announcing here shortly a podcast that I'm going to be launching in October, talking about vaccine courts, talking about the PREP Act, talking about the countermeasures injury compensation program, and talking about the COVID vaccine, how that fits into these acts. And so we're going to start that too. So we've got a busy next 2 to 3 months. We're going to be awfully busy trying to get things put together.
Wow. Now, where are you going to do this this podcast? Is it going to be weekly? What kind of a schedule are you looking at?
It's going to be an audio podcast. I'm going to start out 2 to 3 shows per month. It's going to be based here in Minneapolis, St. Paul area of Minnesota, where I live. And I'm going to have 2 or 3 guests on every time talking about, experts are talking about, you know, the legal issues of the vaccine court, but the legal issues of the PrEP Act. And I wrote an article just this past week about what our government just did to the PrEP Act, and it's very concerning when I started digging into this. They're allowing pharmacists to administer childhood vaccines.
Isn't that terrible? I can't believe it.
It's maddening, but where this is going is that they're going to use the PrEP Act, which is what's there by the Secretary of HHS enacted back in March to handle this COVID epidemic. They're going to use that as the vehicle to dictate vaccine policy across the board and circumvent state legislatures and circumvent Congress. This is where I think this is going to all be done. Is done by fiat, because when you look at that last amendment that to the PrEP Act that was declared this past week, did not require congressional approval, did not require the president's signature. The Secretary of HHS declared that pharmacists can administer childhood vaccines down to the age of 3 for all vaccinations. Nothing to do with COVID vaccine. The reason why is he was prompted by the CDC and their concern that childhood vaccinations have had a dramatic decline during this COVID period, which tells me that the PrEP Act is not about pandemics. It's going to be used against us for all vaccine policy. And so now we got a showdown between this declaration and state law in all the different states, and see which one trumps, you know. Mm-hmm. No pun intended towards our president. It just is that which one will supersede and govern. We don't know yet.
Right.
That's yet to be questioned. So
it was very interesting that it was introduced into Congress on March 11th of 2020. I think
the PrEP Act, right. Mm-hmm.
So kind of interesting.
Well, he declares it and then he lets Congress know. Okay. But no one can stop that secretary unless the president fires him and says, no, you know, don't do it. But that's how dangerous this PrEP Act is. It was, you know, it was passed in 2005.
Right.
On the tails of the anthrax scare and then the avian flu potentially scare that came about. So Congress, you know, was trying to move something forward, and Senate Majority Leader at the time, Frist, was pushing to get this in. Basically, they were looking to provide limited liability or what we call immunity to certain medications or vaccines that could be used so the manufacturers wouldn't get sued. And then also anybody that administers it. Senator Kennedy at the time was saying, no, can't do this, stop it. And a few other advocate groups in the vaccine safety area who were around at that time said, no, we don't want this, because they could foresee what this is really truly going to be, which we see now, you know, 15 years later. But the PrEP Act has been there since 2005. Secretary announces it and declares it in March. Now, it's effective through October of 2024, unless the secretary or the president shuts it down prior, or if there's another epidemic scare, they can extend it again. And we're getting into some very serious liberty and freedom issues here.
Well, absolutely.
And, so it's really concerning. And, so that's where I've been kind of focusing my efforts in looking at that. I'm not that big of a well-versed in all the science. I'm more into, you know, the legal issues surrounding the vaccine policy.
Well, I think that right, the legal issues, but they're based on scientific knowledge, because
right.
you did a lot of work to figure out what happened to our child. So
right. It's but I've met hundreds of families. For my initial book, I interviewed 285 families.
Wow.
Most of them are an hour long. Some of them were 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours long, where we would do interviews in different days and come back to it. The toughest part for me was dealing with the families that have lost a child. And I was thinking, how do I approach these families and say, you want to talk about this? Do you want, and basically what I was asking them to do is, do you want to relive it again? You know, relive that nightmare?
Right. Right.
Most of the families were actually, they have coped with it. They've gone, you know, they're settled with it. They know what's going on. But it did affect me quite a bit, and it slowed down my research, or I had to take a break, because it was a very dark period when I was sitting there and talking to all these families that lost children one day or 2 days after receiving the hepatitis B vaccine. Which was just ungodly.
Terrible. Terrible.
Yes.
There was no reason to give that vaccine.
No, there isn't. There isn't. So it was tough. There was what they call a mini omnibus, where the court system grouped a whole bunch of petitions together, similar to the autism proceeding, but this one only was only 25, and they said, let's look at this. If your child dies, all of them died within 3 days. They all died within 3 days of administering the hepatitis B. And yet the court system ruled against these families, saying there's not enough scientific proof to show that it, and you know, and it's just like what's happening today with SIDS. SIDS, there was a court decision that came out, from the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, which is one step below the Supreme Court. Ruling on a SIDS case and basically shutting the door. So now we have the Boltman case that came out last year, and this case here, the Nunez-Diaz case. So effectively, through policy, not through actual looking at the medical evidence, but through policy, because they're already on record, government attorneys are saying, we cannot allow compensation, because if we do, parents will not vaccinate their children. That was an argument placed at the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals level, one step below the Supreme Court. That tells you, and those rulings are etched in stone now. So that right now, there's no way to get a SIDS case through compensation.
Wow.
And so this program is shutting kids out. You know, it's horrible. And so we had the hepatitis B back years ago, in 2006 and 2007. And now you have, the SIDS cases have been just, been thrown out, not based on science, but based on policy, our government's
right.
policy.
Right. We are going to take a quick 3 minute break. We'll be right back.
Starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and we are talking with Wayne Rohde, and he is the author of The Vaccine Court, The Dark Truth of America's Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. And you have another a rewrite of this book coming out in October, did you tell me?
Yes, mid-October is when it's scheduled to be released.
Wonderful. Terrific. This thing with the hepatitis B vaccine, it was my understanding when I was studying it that it was actually developed for people who may actually have hepatitis or be prone to getting hepatitis. And that group of people declined to accept that vaccine. And so they had, so the drug companies had all this vaccine, and they certainly didn't want to lose money, and so they opted to give it to children, to babies. And it's, what is it? It's supposed to be effective for 7 years, and it's for people who are using sharing needles and engaging in unprotected sex. And that, babies don't do that. I'm very upset about this. I'm very upset about vaccines in general.
Right. Well, my understanding is also on the hepatitis B that you could actually, a pregnant mother, see, they were concerned that the hepatitis B for a positive pregnant mother would go to the unborn child. And what you can do, and it makes it real simple, is you can do a pinprick and test.
Exactly.
You know, the mother right away, you know, 12 hours before birth, giving birth.
Right.
Do a pinprick and test to see if she is positive or not.
Right, but it doesn't make sense.
And then my also understanding is, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that the clinical trials that were done on hepatitis B were done on young, adult women. And adult men. It was never done on children or infants.
Right. This just makes me so upset. This whole, the whole vaccine situation. I don't believe that there's never been, according to my research, never been a vaccine that was effective for anything. Somebody mentioned in Twitter this week that old smallpox vaccine was effective. Well, the heck it was. Most of the people that got smallpox vaccine died of smallpox. They got it as a result of having the vaccine. So this whole vaccine thing is just, it just really upsets me. I get very angry about it. And there's, I don't know of too many families that aren't impacted by vaccine injury. I have a grandchild that is he's got real severe issues. He has an IQ of 167. He is musically talented. You would not believe how talented he is. But he'll never hold a job. He will need help, and he's been institutionalized several times, and it's because of vaccines. He was fought for vaccines, and then with the diarrhea, the constipation, which Dr. Wakefield talked about. Yeah, this whole thing is very upsetting to me.
You know, one thing with Wakefield, I didn't know who he was until a couple of years after our son was injured. I had no idea. But we were reporting to our pediatrician the same symptoms that many other people were reporting to their doctors that Dr. Wakefield was talking about.
Exactly.
So when someone says, oh, you were just, you know, influenced by Wakefield, says, no, I had no clue who he was for several years. And it's, you know, it's just ridiculous. It's just, there's a lot. Here's the thing, is we're having a lot of research now on autoimmune disorders. And there's a lot of this starting to come forth. And yes, we talk about the injuries to our children because that's our next generation. And these teenage kids right now, I would venture to guess there's so many of them that are vaccine injured, and showing signs, whatever. And then they're also over prescribing them prescription medications. So right. we have a wasted generation right now. I did have a conversation with a friend of mine hooked me up with a gentleman who happened to be the undersecretary for Army. And we were talking about, and they're very concerned, the military is very concerned about, what they call the deployment ratios. And that is that will they have enough people to be deployed to serve in the military? And we're not talking about the old-fashioned grunts. We're talking about, because a lot of this is high-tech equipment and things like this, they're very concerned about the damage that's happening to our teenagers right now.
Right.
And it's all going back to vaccinations.
We are going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
It starts with you and me. It starts with you and me. We all can be heroes if we take the lead to change the
world. All right, we are back. And our guest this hour is Wayne Rohde. He is the author of The Vaccine Court, The Dark Truth of America's Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. The update of this book will be out in mid-October. I encourage all of you to purchase the book when it becomes available. His website is thevaccinecourt.com. And you were talking about the military, and I understand that there are 22 former military personnel who commit suicide every day. They're being given a lot of psychological drugs, psych drugs, which may be a result of all the vaccines, because when you join the military, you go through a line and they jab you with everything that they have in their that they have available. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, a lot of the damage we're starting to see is, and there's a wonderful lady, or Dr. Merrill Nass, NASF, who did a lot of research on anthrax and smallpox vaccine damage 10 to 15 years ago. And she was warning people about what this is all going to happen. And there's a lot of information out there if you want to look at anthrax vaccine and smallpox vaccine. Our military are being poisoned before they're being deployed. And with, you know, all these malaria drugs and everything else, depending on where they're being deployed to. I would venture to guess that one out of every five that go through basic training fail to be deployed because of medical conditions that have arisen, or once they get out to the front or where the area they're being deployed can no longer serve properly, and therefore they're on come back and being on some type of a disability within the military system, with the VA system. So we're damaging quite a few of our military unnecessarily. These medications and these vaccines that are being given to them are, there's a big subset of them that are damaging them. And the undersecretary that I was talking to, he was really concerned about the future, people that will be in the military, because they're going to need, it's all high-tech equipment, they're going to need some of our brightest individuals to be out there. And they're seeing that not happening. Wakefield talked about this maybe 4 or 5 years ago, about the declining of SAT scores and ACT scores in our youth in the United States, and the way those systems had to be modified to keep some of our kids get into school, even though they probably, if they were taking the test 15, 20 years ago, they wouldn't achieve those scores. So we're manipulating a lot of things just to cover up what's actually happening to our youth.
They are manipulating. You're not.
They are. The society is. Me personally, no. But and your audience, no. But
exactly, fluoride in the water. That's no good. That'll lower your IQ scores. And you were talking about the military, and any time that you have a group that is governed by the government, in other words, that the government has under their control, such as the military, such as children in school, because now they say, oh, you have to have 72 vaccines by the time you're 18 in order to go to school. So whatever group of people that they have control over, they are going to over-vaccinate.
Sure. It's difficult to be a young parent with young kids these days. My sons are 22. My son Austin is a senior this year in college, and he's going to have to stay home because it's going to be online classes. Mm-hmm. And he's pretty bummed about it, but he gets it. He understands why. Mm-hmm. My son Nicholas, who is injured, we have to take care of him for the rest of our lives and his life. And, he's nonverbal and he requires around the care. He runs around, goes out in the backyard, plays on, jumps on the trampoline, but he cannot, use the bathroom appropriately. He cannot cook and prepare his food for himself. So someone's got to do that.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry.
Well, this is where we are. Now, there's thousands of parents walking the same path that I am.
Right.
But then I look at other parents who no longer can kiss their child goodnight at, when they put them to bed anymore. Right. And that's just, it just tears me apart there too. And then we have other parents that vaccinate the hell out of everybody because that's what they're being told.
Right.
They don't even think, they don't think twice about it. I mean, you have to question, what we are doing with our own bodies, and it's tough, it's difficult, we're here by the grace of God to live, and we need to live life, and people can make their own choices, and wish we could stop people from making bad choices, but that's, we can't do everything for everybody right now. But so we do what we can for ourselves and our families and our friends and reach out. But, I have some big concerns about the military, the future of our military, the future of the kids that are growing up that are, 7, 8, 9, and 10 years of age right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really concerned about what it's going to be like for them in another 10 to 15 years. And then, now with this COVID thing, you got so many other government controls put into place, conveniently put into place. It's like today in Minnesota, our governor.
What is going on up there?
We got a lot of rioting and looting going on again this week in downtown Minneapolis. It's going to look like, with all due respect, it's going to look like the 1980s Detroit. Soon, if we don't get a handle on it.
I used to go to that area several times a year on business.
Yeah.
Beautiful, clean. The Twin Cities was fabulous, and it makes it. I'm very sad that it's happening.
The downtown area is really becoming a wasteland. The suburbs are great, but the downtown core of Minneapolis is becoming a wasteland, and it's just. But right now we should be celebrating our state fair, the Minnesota State Fair, which is huge. Usually about the 20th of August goes through Labor Day, okay? And it's huge. It's one of the nation's we're always vying with, I think, Ohio as the nation's largest state fair. And our nickname is anything that you can fry, you can put on a stick. And that's, you know, that's,
yes.
Yeah. This is, I mean, and it's always like that. This, well, that's been shut down. So we do not have that. But today, our governor, who's, in my opinion, is being very, is a tyrant. He put out a tweet and it really upset me and it really upset quite a few people, including a lot of state legislators. He put up there, it's a picture of him walking through the Minnesota State Fair last year. Okay. Prior, pre-COVID. And he goes, well, if we all learn to keep our masks on for the next 365 days, we can be like this again. And I said, you gotta be kidding me. That he, what he's telling people, he's gaslighting the public and saying, hey, we need to wear masks for the for the next year, and then we'll be able to go to the state fair.
Wow.
I said, you gotta be, that's just, you know, that's the mentality of this governor, and then his followers just walk, they just get right in line behind him. And this is what it's like. And it's just,
he belongs to the Council of Governors, and the Council of Governors, they're pretty much all together, and the council consists of 10 governors appointed by the president, and 5 from each party, and so they're kind of all in bed together, the governors, and in fact, when COVID began, or when they told us about this, something that was going to happen, I don't buy the COVID nonsense, but they put out something to the National Governors Association, was preparing for the COVID-19 vaccine, excuse me, and considerations for mass distribution. So, they're all together in this. They're all in on this scam, which I believe it is.
Yeah. It's just, when one governor makes a decision, you can see how other governors will do things. Our governor was following the California governor, Newsom. Mm-hmm. Whatever he decided, 2 to 3 days later, our governor just made the decisions. And then boom, 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 boom. And our biggest problem here is that our governor decided to move positive patients who've been tested positive back into the long-term care facility. So Minnesota had most of our deaths, 80% of our deaths are elderly living in long-term care facilities or residential. But some states it's a lot lower, but Minnesota, 80% of all the deaths in Minnesota are associated with patients or those who live in long-term care facilities or residential assisted living places.
Mm-hmm. Other things going on in their life.
Well, yeah. But, you know, as we get older, you know, I understand our immune system shut down or they become less protective as we get older. Yes, that happens. And I'm not trying to belittle those who have perished, no.
Right.
It's just that, but what we're doing here, and, you know, this stuff of demanding masks on our 7-year-olds and 8-year-olds in first and second grade, and everybody's got to walk around with a shield between themselves.
That's just child abuse.
Yes, it is. And these kids, the mental health issues will pop up another decade from now. And then we're going to be sitting back going, look, see what happened. It all ties in. And going back to, the PREP Act and how the countermeasures, people don't understand what the countermeasures program is. Countermeasures is much like the vaccine court, except it's used for pandemic, medicines, use such as the anthrax vaccine, Ebola, Zika, things like that have been developed for pandemics only. Well, what I see happening here is that, and the countermeasures program, you only have 1 year for statute of limitations. And so almost everybody is unsuccessful. And when the COVID vaccine comes out, whenever it comes out, injuries from that are you're gonna have to go into the countermeasures program. Well, guess what? You're not afforded an attorney, nor you're not allowed to use medical experts. It's you filling out a petition, getting your medical records and sending it in to, HHS. And then they're gonna make a decision, administrative process, they're gonna make a decision and say yay or nay. And no one will know about it because it's not public disclosure. And there it is. Right now we know of there's like 458 people who submitted petitions because of the H1N1 vaccine that came out, you know, 2009, 2010 and all that. And
which was a big scam anyway.
Right. And only 39 have been awarded compensation, but we don't know what they were for. Only 30. So you have a very small number of people. But I know of several people who submitted medical records and documents and testimony from the treating doctors saying they developed Guillain-Barré, you know, 2 weeks after they received this vaccination. They were denied that because they're saying, well, there's no medical proof that you could have done that.
Oh,
well,
my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, you know, this is the game that's going to be played. And now everybody that's thinking that the COVID vaccine is their savior, if you will, the day of their reckoning is coming when they have a severe reaction to this vaccine, whatever it is, and they try to go into this program and file for compensation. They find out, nope, done. Now you're living in a wheelchair for the rest of your life and you got to pay for your own medical care and stuff like this because you were one of the first that wanted to get this vaccination.
Wow.
You know, this is what we're up against here in the next 6 months. It's coming fast.
And Bill Gates and Fauci and Birx, what are they thinking? Bill Gates is a depopulation guy. His parents were depopulation people. His idea is to depopulate the planet. He's on the one hand, he's saying, "Oh, let us, we want to depopulate you," and on the other hand, he's saying, "Oh, let us give you a vaccine to save your life."
Right. The other concern here with that, what they're talking about, is creating a passport, if you will, some type of to show that you received that vaccination. I think it's here. The Chinese developed an application, a phone app, got three different levels. It determines where you can go in your town, or whether you can travel, whether you can buy things, or, you know, where you can shop and all that, depending on this phone app. Well, I was listening to my own Minnesota Department of Health infectious disease director. And on Friday's update that they give out on local radio, she said she has an app. Now, no one challenged her what type of an app that is.
Oh gosh.
But it doesn't make sense. It does make, you can connect that the state health departments have some type of an app to connect. Now, whether it's just an app to say if you've been tested positive, well, we're going to trace you. Who knows?
Okay, we'll be right back in 3 minutes. All right, we are back with our guest, Wayne Rohde, and he is the author of The Vaccine Court, The Dark Truth of America's Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. The rewrite of that book will be out in mid-October. His website is thevaccinecourt.com. You can follow him on Twitter. Just look for him there under his name. And anyway, we're talking about these apps and the fact that they're trying to impose these apps so that people will not be able to buy or travel or do anything.
Yeah, that's what the Chinese have developed right now, and I'm afraid that's what's going to be used once we get into, Gates and everybody else has talked about these passports, these immunity passports. I don't know what they've got, the apps that are in use right now in the United States. Maybe they're for those people who have been tested positive, and it's a way for them to communicate with their health departments and saying, hey, I'm going to go here, and you can monitor me. You know, I mean, those apps are easy to probably get rid of, or you just leave your phone at home. But it's scary what I think might happen in the next 6 months and what's going to happen to people. And then a lot of them don't know or they don't care.
Go ahead.
I think that so many people are so scared they bought into this. COVID, they think anybody who gets COVID is gonna die. If you looked at some of the online comments, you know, everybody was talking about this, you know, the Sturgis rally out in South Dakota. And you could just see the online comments to the news articles and said, well, it looks like they're all going to die, or, you know, Darwinism all over again. And people just don't understand that. I was talking to my wife earlier today, and I said, you know what? Why isn't there not a good antibody test available that's reliable right now?
Main reason. Even 20 minutes in the sun will take care of anything, will lift your immune system, will take care of COVID. According to Dr. Judy Mikovits, that's all you need, 20 minutes in the sun, and you're not going to have COVID. And they're trying to force people to take a vaccine. They've got people afraid, and people are just so brainwashed, and they're so afraid. They should turn off their TV and go on with their life. We're being programmed to be afraid.
Well, that's what I think. My personal belief is I think there's many of us that are actually, our bodies have developed antibodies to the COVID virus right now. And because a lot of folks, it's similar to the measles and chicken pox and mumps and things like this, where a lot of people who are never vaccinated now have tighter tests that show high immune responses. It's the same thing. It just is that.
Right. Well, thank you so much, Wayne, and we'll talk soon. Thank you so much for being on the program. And keep
going. Well, thank you for. I appreciate the time coming on. Thank you. Good luck with you.
Thank you. Same to you. Bye bye. Take care, listeners. Talk with you next week.